August 5th meeting of the Villa Park Community Development Committee to order. Staff, please take the roll.
Okay, Councilwoman Miles?
Here.
Councilman Cullicott?
Here.
Staff members are Ray Pasqua and Steve Franks.
Okay, the first order of business is the approval of minutes from the June 3rd, 2019 meeting. Okay, then we'll deem them approved. Move on to public comment. We see one person in the audience. This is an opportunity to comment on anything that is not on the agenda. Do you have anything that, any comments, public comments you'd like to make? Anything? Okay. Okay, then we'll assume that there's no public comment. Move on to new items, and this is the conditional use permit request for 18559 Santiago Boulevard. This is a request to exceed the maximum garage door height of 8 feet, 1 inch or more, for two doors at 10 feet and 14 feet. Staff, is there a report?
Briefly, you both have a plan, so that's good. This is a conditional use permit request to allow for the a remodel of an existing single-family detached home with an attached garage. Part of the remodel work includes expanding the garage out towards the street and to the side. And specifically, the request is to install a double roll-up garage door that is 10 feet in height, and then also a garage door that is also roll-up at 14 feet in height, because it exceeds the 8 feet 1 inch maximum that is allowed. A conditional use permit is required, and that's why it's before you this afternoon for your review. So, Mr. Benito Corona is here. He is the applicant and designer. I've been working with Benito now for a better part of 6 to 9 months. There was a lot of stops and starts with this project. Some of it was personal as it relates to the property owner. So he's here to answer any specific questions about the remodel project as well.
And I would just add, in your packet is a copy of a summary of the whole facts surrounding it. It's like the third or fourth page, and that right after that page. There you go.
Okay.
Can I pause for a minute? Is there any conflict since I'm about three doors away?
No.
Okay, there are no other, the project will meet all the other zoning requirements for setbacks and height and so forth.
Yeah, city staff checked it and made sure that it all met the minimum development standards for that zoning district. I should also mention, too, that we sent out courtesy notice letters to all of the abutting property owners. Probably 7-8 days ago, and to date I haven't received any comments either way.
Okay. But I see the applicant has sent letters and received signed okays from adjacent property owners.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anybody that didn't return one?
No, I think you got them all right.
I'm sorry, I didn't.
Well, as Councilman Colcott said, mm-hmm. it looks like there's a letter that went out to all the neighbors.
Yes.
But is there anybody that didn't respond?
No.
Okay.
Just a personal question. On the 10-foot high garage door, how wide is that one? Is it the standard 16 feet or is it?
It's 16 feet.
Okay.
16 or 18, I believe. But it's within that range.
Yeah, I was just curious since it was going to be a little higher, if you made it a little wider too.
Yeah, the only reason the owner is proposing to be that height is because he's going to have a boat going through with the like an RV.
Uh-huh.
And you know, we need to have that clearance.
Exactly.
That's the only mm-hmm. reason we have it. And also, we drove around with the owner, you know, a few blocks away from where he's living now, and we see a couple of those. High ones.
Yeah. Let's see. Could you look at the plans and tell me how wide the that double wide?
Yeah,
the 10-foot-high door is? I didn't catch it in my review. I just...
Okay, it's 14 actually. It's on A2.
A2? Mm-hmm.
Then the other one is 18. One is 14, the other is 18.
I'm sorry, okay. So the...
The one that...
The 10-foot high one is going to be 18 feet?
The 14 is going to be
The 10-foot high garage door mm-hmm. is going to be how wide?
18
feet?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, typically a double garage door is 16, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay.
Standard between 16
okay.
and
18. So you widen it a little more to mm-hmm. keep the proportions.
Yeah,
okay.
Right, yes.
Just asking. Okay. Do you have any other questions?
I do not.
Okay. Any other comments from staff?
No, sir.
You mentioned that there were a number of issues that had to be worked through. Any of the issues that had to be worked through dealing with zoning or?
No, it was just fine-tuning the plans.
Okay.
Information that was required to be on the plans, and so Benito and his business partner got together and put it together. So they got a pretty solid plan now.
Okay.
I move that we bring it to council.
Okay, I second that. So we'll bring it up to council at our next council meeting, which will be on the 27th.
27th, yes.
Okay, and I guess I saw in the agenda package there's a public notice.
Yes, there'll be a public notice, yes.
Okay. So we'll see you on the 27th.
Okay.
All right.
So we'll
thank you for coming.
Thank you.
So the public notice goes out 15 days in advance, so we wouldn't send that out if you hadn't acted today.
Yes.
So we'll take
still
action.
Okay for
get the application in to me.
Yeah,
sooner
we're
later.
Still okay for
yeah.
the deadline on Friday, right?
Mm-hmm. Friday, this Friday, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have the, for some reason, my guy was here, and he gave the ones to you, and he took the ones with the exit labels that you were requesting. He had it with him, but because I think the secretary said that he probably didn't need it to have it.
Mm-hmm.
So he took it back, and so we have it. So just
okay.
You got the copies on.
Yeah, we'll work it out.
That's the notices for the public here. We require the applicant to submit us the addresses and the mailing labels.
Right.
So that's what he was saying.
What's the application for Friday?
That's the
deadline to submit everything in to us. So
that would be the mailing labels and all the stuff that he has, you know, to find the checklist so that we can say it's a completion. You have the plans, so nothing changes the plans, just the paperwork to ensure everything mm-hmm. is all the I's are dotted and T's crossed.
I think I'm probably going to have everything ready by Wednesday.
Okay.
Very good.
Sounds great.
But like I said, I have eventually to go over.
All right.
Okay, thank you,
Benito.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, typically when asking for a variance, we take to the city council.
Thank you.
We ask the applicant, just like most cities ask the applicant to provide the mailing labels and so forth, to provide the direct notice to the homeowners. Okay. All right.
Okay, then on the, we had item number B, basically it should be one, the variance for 17861, we spoke about it, Morrow Circle. The owner has withdrawn that request, so we will not be moving forward on that. It's an advisory, we're just telling you so.
Mm-hmm.
That was a proposal he had regarding the setback issue and discussion, which kind of led into the subject, next subject we have, but just a heads up because we want to have full closure on the item.
Mm-hmm. And so the next item is the code amendment.
Yeah, we had talked about all the zones that were basically, I'll let Ray talk about it. It gets kind of confusing. Mm-hmm. But basically, the zones that were misidentified in our zoning.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you would ask us to do is come back with options and alternatives. So Ray has sort of come up with a proposal, I think, that we would recommend to council and yourselves and then subsequently to council. I'll let Ray go into details, but basically it would be language that would require the all applicants to live within the development standards, so right, won't you?
Yeah, sure. Just to put this a little bit in the context and for the benefit of Councilwoman, I'm looking through this this particular code section in our zoning ordinance, and I was astounded to learn that, including the last two amendments that you were involved with, Councilman, that this code section has been amended 8 times since 1988. And so it's an ever-evolving code section of the zoning ordinance, and it's necessary. It's a moving target, because one of the unique things about this city is that the properties here are pretty much atypical. There's not one that's the same as the other one. Unlike, you know, where I live in Irvine, it's pretty much cookie cutter, and so there's a development standard that, you know, can be applied to just about all of the lots in Irvine. Here, it's a little different. And I'll just go back to 2015 real quickly. That exercise in the code amendment was to address some legal non-conforming E4 lots. The minimum lot size for E4 zone properties is 20,000 square feet. And what the city discovered, what city staff discovered, was that there was a whole host of lots, E4 lots, that were less than 20,000 square feet. So they're considered legal but non-conforming. They were legally subdivided, but because of the change in the code, I don't know what standards were used to create these E4 lots back then, but they've changed. And so they become legal non-conforming lots. As a direct
result. My understanding is that when the city was incorporated, they zoned the entire city as E4.
Oh, okay.
And so, you know, we've been trying to clean it up ever since.
Yeah. So as a direct result of these lots being legal non-conforming, some property owners came to City Hall saying, gosh, you know, because of the status that I have on my property, I'm having a difficult time refinancing or getting a construction loan to do anything. They eventually got it, as I understood, but it was a little bit more, it was a hitch in the whole process, because it had this, it was flagged as a legal non-conforming lot. So the city council provided a specific directive to staff to deal with properties that were 17,000 square feet or more. So we did text changes, we did code amendments to create development standards for lots that were the nomenclature would be E4-17, E4-18, E4-19, and then you got the typical E4 20,000 square foot. Then subsequent to that, in 2017, we addressed the balance of it, including some lots that were R1 lots that were huge. We have R1 lots that are as big, if not bigger, than some of the E4 zone properties. So we created development standards for those lots. So that was the lot, that was the code amendment from 2017. And then so now, in the present time, and as Steve alluded to, the property owner on Morrow Circle, and councilman is familiar with that street because you had owned the property there at some point in time, correct?
And just across the street from that.
Across the street from this property owner who came in and wanted to do a detached patio structure, and in doing the preliminary review, as we always do, discovered that these lots were small. Comparatively speaking, at least for E4 zone properties. What I did here is I made a copy, also. The top sheet, of course, is our current zoning map. And Murrow Circle is at the southwest corner of the city, and south of, I guess it would be,
Villa Park Road. Yeah,
right. Villa Park Road. Okay, so the white boxes at that corner are the 9 lots. It was a subdivision that was created or was subdivided back in March of 1974. It was E4. It's an E4 zone, but the next page is a page that I took out of the county assessor's parcel map book for these lots. And I wrote in there an estimate of what their the size of the property. So you could see that there's one lot right off of Morrow Circle as you come in from your Villa Park Road, even less than what would be the minimum requirement for an R1 lot. And then
what's
it goes
the minimum
up,
requirement for an R1 lot?
R1 lot, minimum lot size, Councilman, is 8,000 square feet.
Really?
Yeah. And so this one is south of that. It's about 77,000 square feet.
7,700.
That's lot number 39?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, parcel number 39. So that prompted us to look at our code again. And what we've come up with in discussions with Steve and with Bill, who's been here almost 15 years, just to kind of get their take and bounce off some ideas. The proposal to address E4 zone properties that are much less than what a minimum would be for E4 zone is to include a provision that requires these lots to not follow the E4 zone development standards, but to follow the appropriate R1 development standards. Mm-hmm. And we already have that in the books. So
already have the R1 requirements in the books.
Yeah, okay. That's correct. So all we're dealing with are these very small E4 zone properties that are without a development standards. Obviously, if you were to apply E4 zone development standards to these lots, it would not be equitable to the property owner. It would not work at all, especially in a built environment. They
wouldn't
be able to do
anything existing, more. Their existing residences would not meet the setback requirements.
Yeah. Yes.
Right.
So that's our recommendation.
This is to rezone them as R1?
I'm sorry?
The recommendation is to rezone these lots as R1?
To include a provision in the code that addresses the
like we
E4.
Did with the larger ones, so that anything between 8,000 and 1,699 must comply with the R1.
Development
standards.
Even
though it's zoned E4.
So
similar. Zoning the same, but just say that, okay.
Same thing we did for the other ones, which is a much simpler process to revise than to rezone.
And the benefit of that is if we went ahead and did a map change, who knows, probably we'll be back here in 6 months and telling you, hey, we found more E4 zone properties that are 7,000 square feet. So
or subdivided properties that were, et cetera. So we think this is being handled consistent with how we've handled it in the past.
Sounds like a good solution.
So we would recommend that we would come to the council with that change in the ordinance language accordingly, which would afford everybody the opportunity should they refinance.
That's what I was going to say. So this will protect everyone from
by ordinance,
that extra hassle.
Yeah. Yes. By ordinance, they would have to comply with, it would be the city's codes that say that they must comply with the standards between 8,000 and 16,999. So they'd be able to show that to the bank or refinancing. Here it is.
Cool.
Good to go.
So, okay. Where's the language? Is it in this?
Well, he's working on the finalizing language, but it'd be very similar to language you previously approved. But we didn't want to do this if this was an idea that you guys weren't
comfortable.
So
the concept sounds great to me.
Okay.
I could read off the draft. It would just say properties located within the E4 single-family residential estate zone that are between 8,000 and 16,999 square feet in size shall comply with the appropriate R1 single-family residential zone development standards.
But we've got one property here that's less than 8,000.
Yeah.
So how are we going to address that?
That's the whole thing. I just discovered this last Friday.
Well, that was one of the things we talked about is that, you know, the problem is R1 is 8,000 or above, so we end up having to.
Yeah, we had to actually the last amendment, we had to split the R1 between 8,300 or 13, between 8,000 and 13,005. And then there's another E4 zone that's 13,501 to 1699.
Right.
Yeah.
So we've got at least one homeowner that is going to be left out in the cold with the current, your current proposal.
Mm-hmm. So
how do we take care of that homeowner?
I could amend this and say or less than 8,000 square feet.
Or less than, yeah.
Okay.
That way it'll capture everything.
Yeah. We don't want to have to come back and say, well, we've got another one.
Yeah, we got another one.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah.
But we were trying to be consistent with the same language that we had,
understood,
that you had proposed before.
Yeah.
Okay.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Okay, so you'll be putting that together and submitting to the council.
The ordinance change, yes, right. Since it's an ordinance change, we have to go through a different process of two readings and all that, so we have to give notice, but we'll process, follow the ordinance, and come forward with that language with your recommendation, assuming we have a recommendation to move forward.
Yes, I agree.
Agreed.
Yeah, it sounds like a very elegant solution. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Probably much quicker, too.
Okay, and let's see. That's a good amendment. Now, information items.
You
the
have
status of significant development projects.
You have a report from July, so it's very current, of all the building reports, the projects.
Yeah. What's going on at, let's see, Mesa Drive? There's looks like a new house.
Yeah, it's a $1.6 million single-family dwelling.
So look that one up.
Yeah.
Anything of note on that project?
Nope, they're all complying and everything's, you know.
Is that the handicap?
I don't. I'm not sure that's the one, but I it might be right. I think it's
maybe.
Yes, it is.
It is.
It is.
Yeah.
I was looking 18592. In fact, he was in here just the other day. We're dealing with discussions about, you know, what he needs plan wise and all that. So.
Okay. Any questions or comments on the significant projects?
The Camden Circle, is that Draper?
Where's Camden Circle?
Sounds right.
10262
Camden. The name sounds right.
Project is 225,000.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, that's it. Find it there, and I recognize it.
Any others that?
No, we're busy. We continue to be busy, which is about, you know, this is about average for what we have. So, you know, this is good.
Good.
Signs of a healthy economy when you get changes and things continuing to happen. And so, you know, we're averaging about 30 days or less for plan check, which is really good too. If you go to another city, it's remarkable compared
to
others.
It's astonishing.
So we're still hitting that mark, and even with a volume like this.
Awesome.
Yeah, I know down in San Clemente, it's measured more in months.
I mean, we have other cities that it's off the charts. Hmm. Jared was telling me La Habra Heights is 2 to 3 years.
Oh, my.
Is that even legal?
Yeah.
I mean,
the city just issues?
Everything changed? Like codes and stuff could change.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I am also a planning consultant for the city of Costa Mesa, and we do offer developers and contractors accelerated plan check, but
at a cost.
You got to pony up a little bit more money, but there's no guarantee.
Yeah,
so it's a roll of the dice.
We used to do that, if you could pay for accelerated plan check, mm-hmm. A lot of developers did.
Mm-hmm. We treat them all the same, and 30 days is a really nobody complains about 30 days.
Right.
No. Talking with contractors around, it's we always get compliments.
Yeah, we're very easy to deal with. Good.
Okay, code enforcement matters.
You have it out through the last page of your packet today. You'll see STR is one you added, the Featherhill. That's single. I'm sure the short-term rental. They were publicly noticed. on the 2nd, which was, what, last Friday, with public notice. We had to go through mm-hmm. a process, but their notice, and so we have certain time frames to remediate or not do it, and we'll go forward. But just that's the one you added.
Have you heard anything back from the property
no.
owner?
No.
How'd you know?
Another resident, actually one of his friends was looking to come and visit, so they were looking for short-term rentals in the vicinity and said, hey, wait a minute, there's one on your street.
Oh.
So he sent, so the other resident on my street forwarded the link yeah. to the short-term rental site. Apparently, I didn't look at it myself, but from what he told me is that it was listed like it was in Orange. So that, you know, if we just did a scan or a survey to see what short-term rentals were in Villa Park, it wouldn't pop up. So basically, trying to,
yeah, that's just,
pretty
that's
shady.
If you go through, and I sent you out all material today about that, cities are trying to approach it in different ways, but enforcement's the challenge for all of these codes and whatever. And it's a very time-consuming and resource. I mean, for us to now enforce, it's difficult, too, mm-hmm. because you have to allow 30 days for remediation, blah, 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 notice them, and, you know, so certified mail, et cetera. You have to go through a certain process. So it's a challenge, but you see, they have staff dedicated to do this in other cities, like yeah. full-time staff. That's what
so
they do.
Does this person, does the owner of the home live in Villa Park?
No.
The guy, he's a neighbor up the street, and... We've all noticed that it's continued to be used as a short-term rental property ever since we adopted the ordinance. And before we adopted the ordinance, the homeowner contacted me and said, well, give me a special deal because I've already been doing this. And I said, well, yeah, you've been doing it, but you've not been doing it legally. And now we're just adopting an ordinance to make it more clear that it's not legal. Mm-hmm. You know, it's basically, it was illegal before because it was a commercial use of a residential property, and he said, "Well, then I'll just do all of my rentals. They'll be identified as a 30-day rental, but I'll have a bunch of them every month." So maybe that's something we need to look at. Is
yeah, we looked at one of the things. That's why I send around that information on how other cities are dealing with the longer term thing. And I've got Todd researching too what our options are because it's the challenge.
Yeah, like
if they have a 30-day contract. That's sort of the issue is it's a legally binding 30-day contract, so you have that.
Yeah, but only how many 30-day contracts within a 30-day period?
Well, that's sort of what the next step would be, or you can have X number of 30-day contracts in a 6-month period, or, you know, so we could do certain things like that, which is what Todd's exploring, what other cities are approaching, because you cannot, or you just say no short-term rentals, nothing 60 days or 90, you could change dates. Mm-hmm. So we have some options, but I've just given you that and sharing you that information today.
Okay. He was very, very confrontational when we were adopting the ordinance. And the homeowner had done a major renovation of the property, but during the course of the renovation, he had relocated him and his family to Hawaii and actually turned over his business. It's Home Comfort USA. And he's got another business and is having staff maintain that one. And so he initially tried to sell the property last year, shortly before we adopted our ordinance, and found that, you know, he had done everything pretty top drawer and realized he couldn't get his money back out of what he invested in. So he thought, well, I'll do a short-term rental then. So anyway. But I don't expect that he'll ever be moving back to that. He's pretty.
No, he doesn't. Doesn't live in the area. And
yeah, he lives in Hawaii.
All that, even tracking. Now, we went in some legal questions. Do we have to notify him? We have to certify that it's been delivered to the property, so it's posted on his property, which is all we needed to do.
And what about what's going on with the gentleman with the cars on?
Our friend, mm-hmm. Mr. Bivens.
He
has, we had met with him, and he has until the end of this month to remove them, or we start removing them for him. That's sort of, he gave us a time frame, and we talked to Todd, and that was sort of you give him a time, let him give you the time frame. So he established a time frame, and now it's up, now he's got to live with that. And he, gives us, quote-unquote legal reasons why they're under, it's under a research investigation, blah, 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 blah. So we said, okay, you tell us when that's going to be completed, and he did. And then when he did that, he put it in writing and he committed to it. So we'll be taking action. I have had some people contact us who've tried to contact him to help him. Mm-hmm. I don't know if the Sizzells, I don't know if they've been successful. I haven't talked to Wayne or Mary about it in length, but I know Mary called me and asked what needed to be done, and I went down list by list of what needed to be done, and you drive by there and it's not done. So he just puts up more flags. So he's not living there. He's admitted he's not living there, but it doesn't matter. The property needs to be maintained. So we're moving forward on that.
Anything else of notes?
No, just you see the list here. We've tried not just list them but close them. You see there's probably, six of them that he closed this month, which is good, too, because that means you've seen resolution. The fact that you haven't had to see them on the council agenda means there's voluntary resolution, which is always the best if they'll do it, because you don't want to get into a legal battle with these guys. I mean, we'll win eventually, but it just involves time, effort, and a lot of consternation.
What was the illegal business?
I don't know which one is. We've got several of them going on. That
Bella Vista.
Huh?
Bella Vista off of
Yeah, no. Oh, no, you're right. That's the
One right
that's
there.
Our yeah.
Oh. And that
now we will be fining her if she does not remove it by the end of by
30 days. We sent out a letter, so it's the 16th of this month.
If she doesn't have them gone by 16th, we begin fining her $100. $150, then $500 every day.
I'm sorry, I missed that. What does she got to remove?
The nursery off Meats.
Nursery. Oh yes, yes.
The one on the north side, the north side of Meats. So it's going to add up really quickly. Every day she'll get a new letter. And
she responded at all?
No,
I haven't received anything.
So after her,
they put up trees, which doesn't have any. They put up trees almost like to barrier to block it. So Brad Reese called me and said, "Hey, you got to see this." So I drove over and looked at it, and it's as if we're going to not see it. But it is not the business that is cited; it is the owner. Mm-hmm. We put a lien on the home, so when we've notified the homeowner. So that's the other issue. We notified her; that's her daughter living there, but it doesn't matter. It's the owner is going to be cited. And
per code, we sent out the letter. Certified.
Right. Again, that certified.
They are in receipt of it. We have the receipt of that she did receive it. So, to date, we haven't received. I haven't, anyways, call or anything from.
They're in. They're going to dig in. So we're going to. The money will get their attention. Then, when you go to court, according to Todd and I've gone through this on a couple of things. When you go to court, the court's going to say, "Have you tried to resolve this at the lowest possible level, as opposed to coming in with a sledgehammer first?" Mm-hmm. So we will have taken. Gone through the verbal counseling, blah, blah, blah. We'll have gone through the citation process. And then eventually we can, we'll come to counsel if she's not, compliant, and we charge a certain dollar amount, we'll come and potentially file a criminal complaint. But to do that, we have to go through all these steps.
So after the certified letter stated what we
yes.
did in counsel, and that she needed to cease and desist. And
Didn't do that, so okay. We had to notify her that she's going to be fined.
So 30 days from the end of the letter,
right.
The first letter, so then a new letter went out saying she had an additional 30 days to
or she was going to be fined.
So that's 60 days now, right?
Yeah, she's had plenty of time.
I agree. So then now the 16th will be the end of that 60 days?
Yes, and she will be. We will send her a letter each and every day. She'll receive a new certified letter saying here's your another... $500, $100, $150, $500, and then it goes up to $500, and then it stays
she's
at $500.
She's not going to sign it after she gets the first one.
It doesn't matter. We'll post it. All we have to do is post it at that point.
Okay.
So we will have gone through the steps. So, like I say, within a couple of days, a week, you can imagine she's going to be owing us several thousand dollars. Mm-hmm. And, and we collected a lot. So you recall on the Mesa property, we collected $13,500 on that one property.
Mm-hmm. There's got to be more to the story. I don't understand why she wouldn't. There's got to be more to the story with her and this gardener.
That's her issue. It's
not our issue. Yeah.
Violation of the city code, and the council's ruled accordingly. Mm-hmm. So it's an enforcement issue now. Mm-hmm. And like I say, eventually, when we reach a dollar threshold that we feel is sort of just stagnant, then we will come to the council and potentially initiate legal action as a criminal complaint.
And the criminal complaint would be?
Violation of city ordinance.
Okay. Criminal violation. Okay.
The criminal violation. It's the law, so yeah. to continually violate. Now, the administrative process is, well, like I say, the courts look, have you tried to resolve this administratively first? And we will have said yes. The attorney can check that box and say, yes, we have. We find, and we'll have issued a lien on our house by the time we go to criminal court.
Can we recoup any of the attorney's fees for that? Or
in a criminal complaint, there's potentially, yes. Okay. There are damages. That would be up to the court to decide. But we certainly would file for it. It's the court decides on that. We will potentially more than recoup our legal costs by the time we finish fining her, if you will. And we'll put a lien on the house, so it doesn't matter if she decides to pay. It's going to be paid.
Okay.
It'll definitely cover staff time.
Yeah, it will cover staff time. At $500 a day, that's going to cover really fast. We're going to get over that threshold. There is no point for her not to comply. There's just no reason. But if you go by there, there is no signs of movement.
So they're operating in the morning. Still there.
Oh yeah, they're operating in the morning. There's a guy. They're congregating in the morning and leave and coming, bringing the trucks back in at night. They're just total defiance.
Business as usual.
Yeah, total defiance.
Just for clarification, the first letter we prepared and sent out to the property owner wasn't in accordance with our municipal code. Todd told us that, and so we generated another letter. So I think we prepared that letter the very next day after council took action. We wanted to send them a message that, hey, you guys got 30 days in which to remove everything. And then we found out later on there's a
prescribed language that we have to use.
There's certain language that we have to use. And so we redrafted the letter with Todd's review and approval of it, and then we sent it out.
What was the time period between the first and the second?
It wasn't
very long. 15 days, maybe.
Yeah.
Because we asked Todd, what do we do next?
Yeah,
and he said, whoa, you can't go next step unless you've done the right language. So I said, let's dot our I's and cross our T's, let's fix it then.
Absolutely, yeah, because you don't want to have them come back and have it all thrown out because we didn't do it right.
So. Right, so it's been done right at this point, so
yeah.
we're in movement.
Okay. All right, so those are all the code enforcement violation issues, questions? Okay. So if there's nothing else to discuss.
Just to give you a heads up on the street maintenance project, you'll be coming forward with a closeout of the last change order that's being negotiated, and we are initiating we're pushing forward on the next phase of that.
Good.
So, and there is a grant that just came through for rubberized asphalt that Cal Recycle has just issued, so Akram and I are talking about that because that potentially could help us go further and get some more done if we got some grants. Because we weren't counting on grant money to take care of that.
Great.
So we'll see what we're eligible. Not applications due by October 3rd.
Okay. Okay. Anything else?
Nope.
Well, then we're adjourned. Thank you.
All right.